So right now, Radio Basics has, and we're really honored to have on air Fred Hampton Jr., Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. of the Prisoners of Conscience Committee. Fred Hampton is the Jr. is the international chairman for the Prisoners of Conscience Committee, a national revolutionary organization in the United States that was founded in the 9 years Fred Hampton Jr. spent in prison. In his own words, POCC was literally birthed from behind enemy lines. Its birth canal was the concentration camps. Its umbilical cords are the prison chains. POCC uses what happens inside the prisons as a learning tool to understand the oppression that takes place on the outside and define themselves as an organization of African revolutionary freedom fighters whose agenda is to liberate the minds and hearts of African and colonized people. Fred Hampton Jr. is also, of course, the son of one of the most inspirational revolutionaries of our time, the deputy chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party. Fred Hampton Sr. was assassinated by a special police unit organized by both the Chicago Police Department and the FBI in the early morning hours of December 4th, 1969. He was murdered in his apartment along with comrade Mark Clark. And as he lay beside his pregnant girlfriend, Akua Najiri. He was shot point blank in the head by police as a result of the organizing he was doing and while he was still sleeping. Fred Hampton Jr. has been birthed into political struggle. He became an active community organizer himself and has made sure his father's legacy did not die with the man. In 1990, he became president of the National People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, an organization founded to defend the democratic rights of the African community. And for his activism, he became a target of police violence and repression. And in 92, he was jailed on false charges stemming from the 92 rebellions in response to the Rodney King beating and acquittal of the officers involved. He was in jail for over 9 years and released on September 14th, 2001, and since then has been tirelessly organizing with the Prisoners of Conscience Committee. Fred Hampton Jr., thanks so much for coming on the program today.
Thank you, and on behalf of the POCC, the Prisoners of Conscience Committee, which is known in many arenas as the Panther Cubs, Black Panther Cubs, we extend a revolutionary appreciations and a clenched fist to you, to Basics newsletters, to the community, and to the people in general. So again, revolutionary appreciation for giving us the opportunity to update the people that the work that the POCC is moving forward with.
Most definitely, and it's an honor really to have you on the show today. There's a lot of inspiration from the struggles that you guys are doing, especially for police brutality work and other kinds of work around those issues that are facing racialized communities here in the city. To begin, can you talk a little bit about the founding of the POCC as it was created while you were facing those 9 years of incarceration and, what goal, what principles it was under which it was created and how it has developed since then?
Well, that was a powerful introduction that you laid out, and you pretty much gave a good bio on not only myself but the work that the POCC has been engaged in, as what you pointed out. It was literally birthed from behind enemy lines. And when we say that term, enemy lines, we're talking about, those who are held captive in these concentration camps, what many people refer to as the growing prison industrial complex. Our position is that we are clear that there's a war being waged on the African community and other oppressed people, and a war that goes under the euphemisms of war on drugs, war on gangs, or war on guns. The reality is, when it comes down, it's a war on the people. I myself was held captive in those concentration camps for a little bit under 9 years, and this was we recognized that the late great Malcolm X had made the analogy when he referencing America itself. He said America itself represents a prison, and we also take with the visionary Minister Huey P. Newton, co-founder of the Black Panther Party, when he stated that prison operates as a microcosm of the outside community. And this is something that we stress to point out. When people hear our name, a lot of people think that maybe it's a prison activist organization. We say no. On the contrary, we're a revolutionary organization. And we expose the contradictions inside the prisons, concentration camps in particular, kind of similar in the similar spirit that the Black Panther Party, which was initially the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, they initially talked about the role of the occupying army in our community, that being the police, and just particularly the police brutality, but not did not limit that. Their organizing was not limited to just the police brutality. In fact, as the Black Panther Party said, they were dealing with exposing demagoguing politicians, the avaricious, greedy businessmen, and the fascist paid cops. And they said the most in-your-face, the most blatant graphic issue, the graphic contradiction that the people can deal with, the people can see that to deal with, that being the police. And that, you know, so they use that as a catalyst or a mobilizing force to expose other issues that was going on in our community. We, in that similar spirit, take the whole issue of the mass kidnapping of our people inside these concentration camps to further expose not just what's going on inside those camps, but the we don't care health care that our people are subjected to, whether it be inside the Attica's in New York or the Acorn Projects in Oakland, California, whether it be police terrorism that people, that forces to in SCI Green in Pennsylvania, or Folsom, or Soledad, to the blatant police terrorism that we see runs rampant through our communities in south side of Chicago and Detroit and Cincinnati and so on and so forth. So we attempt to draw that correlation to the outside community. And, and in fact, we say we think it's important that we have an umbilical cord type relationship from those who are here captive to the outside community. And again, we are a revolutionary organization. We don't define ourselves as prison activists. We say we look at a prototype or example as the Black Panther Party, which is one of the most revolutionary organizations that North America has yet to witness. Yes. And we say it's a tough act to follow, but we try our best as the POCC is carrying on that legacy.
Most definitely, you know, an organization that I think anyone who considers themselves a revolutionary needs to study intently, needs to draw huge inspiration from. If you, you know, want to pursue any kind of legitimate or successful movement in urban North America today, the Black Panther Party is definitely as such. Can you expand a little bit in terms of the specific programs and initiatives the POCC is undertaking at the moment, whether that's in relation to prisons, but as well as survival programs, anti-police terror programs, you know, on the outside in communities?
Some of our survival programs, we have free food giveaways in which we distribute food to some of our community anchors. These are the community anchors, are institutions, and some of the churches that are the support of the work that we do. And we will serve these food drives. And it will not just be food drives for food drive's sake. The bags and donations will have information or updates on different cases we're working on, whether it be the case of Sharon Grant, who was gunned down in Inglewood, south side of Chicago, by Chicago Police Department, whether it be exposing those and the rapid police terrorism that we're subject to in our community, whether it be updating the case about the case of Leonard Peltier or Mumia Abu-Jamal, someone who's denied parole, who's held captive, or just one of the non-famous names who was locked up in those concentration camps. We also have implemented some such tactics as the POCC Code of Culture. Code of Culture is our mantra for that is, we say, there are too many of us that sing sing for artists just to be talking about some bling bling. In other words, we try to win artists to some point of unity, you know, saying, to address some of the issues that's going on in our community. And an example we've seen that we implemented the POCC Code of Culture was the Dave Chappelle Block Party, where we seized the stage, and while people were there listening to the artists, we gave updates on different political prisoners and other cases that we're working on. We also have the Code of Conduct. This is where we approach the streets, and we said we up the ante with those who engage in different street activities. We said, you're going to bang, bang for freedom. And we say to the African community in particular, what set you claiming it should be Africa, you know what I'm saying? And draw the line, the distinction between, you know what I'm saying, like a code of conduct. Certain things should not be tolerated in the community. No snitching, no rape, and so on and so forth. We have the POCC educational ethic. POCC educational ethic is where we take the statement where Minister U.E.P. Newton said, we should distinguish being educated as opposed to being trained. And we say, those who are going to these schools, these universities, and these institutions, we say, take the bourgeoisie skills and make them work in the interest of the masses. Make it a class project to work on exposing the toxic waste in Hunters Point in San Francisco, you know, this flooding through our communities. Make it a class project to work on the C numbers. These are prisoners who are locked up in Illinois with indeterminate sentences. So So these are different campaigns which we meet the people where they're at, and they're willing to some point of unity with the struggle.
It's interesting when we look at the Black Panther Party, when, you know, even the FBI spokespeople are talking in reference to them. It's not the, you know, this image of, or the armed patrols. It's not that aspect of their work, as much as that was, you know, very important and very heroic, that frightened the authorities. It was the survivor programs. It was the breakfast programs. It was, you know, the mass education. That was what was really striking fear into the hearts of, you know, the administration and police officials at the time, because that's what was, you know, drawing the trust and drawing the masses to the party.
No doubt about it. But a lot of times you hear different assessments, and a lot of times be incorrect assessments. You know, while the Black Panther Party is self-targeted, and it's a fact that with the COINTEL program, which is an acronym for the Counterintelligence Program, over 90% of it was directed to the Black Panther Party. And a lot of people say, well, they were targeted because they had guns. But the reality is a lot of people had guns. A lot of people say, well, they were targeted because they knew the law. A lot of people knew the law. This organization was an organization that came from the valley, not the mountaintop. It had no aspirations to be on the mountaintop. And it put in, it said, what Minister UEP Newton said, that people learn best through observation and participation. In other words, they did not get involved in what Chairman Fred referred to as intellectual masturbation. They just didn't talk about children are hungry. They implemented the first free breakfast program where Chicago, you've seen them feed a minimum of 3,500 children a week. You know what I'm saying? And the Rainbow Coalition, which Chairman Fred organized, contrary to popular belief. A lot of people believe it was Reverend Jesse Jackson, but that's a watered-down version or attempt to hijack the Rainbow Coalition. The Rainbow Coalition, when Chairman Fred organized, it was a revolutionary act. When he armed a politic that was even able to transcend the simple race nationalism, which is a group of young whites who identified themselves as young patriots, who at one point, these guys were so reactionary, they were wearing Confederate flags on their jackets. He warned them some point of unity. He warned the Young Lords, a Puerto Rican organization, to some point of political unity. He warned the street organizations or the street tribes, such as the formerly known Devil Disciples, to a point of unity where they got up publicly and said, we now recognize ourselves to be known as the Black Disciples due to the political education we received from Chairman Fred and the Black Panther Party. And subsequently, they started working the Free Breakfast Program. He warned the Vice Lords, even after the FBI proposed to the Vice Lords they would get them 16th Street, a portion of the west side of Chicago, if they were not allowed the Black Panther Party to open a free medical center on 16th Street. Chairman Fred, charismatic and courageously, went over there and addressed this situation and warned these brothers and sisters to a point of unity where they subsequently started working at the Black Panther Party Free Medical Center. This is real deal. This is real deal talk. This is real deal walk. This is what the Black Panther Party was successful in doing. And even Minister UEP Newton has said that we must even politicize the gun. It wasn't just a question about just carrying the gun for gun's sake. And they understood the importance of the politics. And that's where the Black Panther Party was targeted. That's where the Black Panther Party to this day has continued to be targeted. That's why you see the government, U.S. government, and a lot of those who work in the interest of the government, are steady attempting to hijack the legacy or to co-opt the legacy of the Black Panther Party. And we say we would not on our watch. You know what I'm saying? In fact, the POCC, we say we are the great-grandchildren of Garvey, the offspring of Malcolm, and the ideological cover of the Black Panther Party. And it's an organization that's been often imitated but never duplicated. And we said it's a tough act to follow, but we're going to try our best. But right now to this day, they shoot up Chairman Fred's tombstone where he's buried at right now. Places like Menard Penitentiary, where Chairman Fred was locked up in 1969, where I was at 1999. They still got our photographs in every gun tower right now as we speak. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? The government is even validated or built up bogus organizations, you know what I'm saying, to counter the legacy that this organization did, what it stood for, you know what I'm saying? So it's what Malcolm said, the government takes a position, when they can't stop it, they will attempt to co-opt it, water it down, change it, make it something to be. That's what we see the government and those working interests in government trying to do the legacy of Black Panther Party. We say it won't happen, not on our watch.
Tomorrow, Fred Hampton Jr., Chairman, is going to be the Prisoner's Justice Day here in Canada, which is in commemoration of struggles that have taken place within, among those incarcerated within this country. Can you also talk a little bit about the programs that you have in place in reference to prisoners, whether that's, when they're reintegrating them into the community, community-to-community, person-to-person, links with political prisoners, et cetera?
We think most of our campaigns with those who are held captive in particular, the one prisoner, one contact is extremely important. It's essential. The one prisoner, one contact is basically where we say at any given time, everybody in the outside community should be able to give us a status check. In other words, an update on somebody who's held captive. I mean, whether the Marshall Eddie Conways in Baltimore, the Sunday Adekolis, the Matula Shakurs, the Move 9, the Rochelle St. Kim McGee's, and whoever may be, or even just some brother down the street, or someone who doesn't have a famous name. This is very important, because I know a lot of times people believe that their loved ones are alive and they're doing well inside these dungeons, but the reality is, similar to the tactic that was implemented by Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler said that his initial victims in the gas chambers were the ones who did not receive any mail. He studied that. The SS Army studied that. And we see, like in Illinois, there are prisoners who have been dead over excess of 15 years, but the government still has them on account. Because why? No accountability. So the one prisoner, one contact is important. Everyone should be able to give us some status at any given time. Where this person is at, if they're alive, are they in isolation, what's their status? So that's very important. We also have those who come back to the community. We have the welcome black to the community. Again, the welcome black to the community. So when these forces get back, basic needs like toiletries and, you know, underwear and just clothing and stuff like this here. And we have artists like Malik Youssef, and please understand, check this guy. Malik Youssef is one of our POCC forces. He's an artist also. Very supportive. He's up, so he hears up the welcome black to the community. Things that you would take for granted, you know what I'm saying, people have soap and just reintegrating back into outside society. And a lot of these artists talk this stuff, you know what I'm saying? They talk a lot of good stuff. They about the hood, the street. When it comes down to action, support something, they're going to do nothing. They're missing the action. When you have forces like Malik Youssef call upon, man, he's right there for duty.
I think one of the statements that you make that is really telling is that, you know, every prisoner, in the sense when we're talking about a prison industrial complex that's so ingrained in racism and imperialism as it is in the United States, that every prisoner, in essence, is political. When we look at it, so that it's not a matter of just linking up with or extending our solidarity to those, as you said, that are well known or that have been incarcerated initially, particularly because of a political purpose. But it's very important to extend that to all those that are facing incarceration.
No doubt about it. Opposition. We say, in fact, a lot of people disagree with our mantra. The POCC says free them all. And we say free them all, and I know a lot of people say, well, what about those who are industrial crimes against the community? We say first and foremost, we see no legitimacy in U.S. imperialism. If anyone believes that this system was interested in implementing some sort of justice, if that was the case, people like George Bush, BP Oil, and the current administration, a lot of these criminals, you know what I'm saying, they're going to be buried up under the penitentiaries. But it's not about justice. We don't validate it, and we don't think that they're trying to, you know, they're not trying to implement justice. We say the United States Marines says kill them all, let God sort them out. The POCC says free them all, let the people sort them out. We say what Chairman Mao Zedong said, you know what I'm saying, we understand that there are contradictions, but we don't say we got to have power in a democratic space to be able to deal with the contradictions ourselves. We don't say we're not going to be calling on Frank James to stop what Jesse James has created. And we have to be very clear and very upfront about that.
From a socioeconomic perspective, can you go into a little bit more in terms of the benefit, the massive profits that the prison industrial complex generates for American capitalism, for American imperialism?
Similar to the facts, similar to the stats of that of era of chattel slavery. The reality is, historically, there was not even the concept of Europe. You had different warring tribes, such as the Vandals and barbarians. That's where these words and terms come from. However, when the slave trade came into existence, you know, a lot of people, when we go through colonial schools, we heard discussions about the trade of rum and cocoa and gold and copper. But the trading of black bodies, this was created the whole world economy. And you go through these different townships, and similar to today, you go through these different townships and places. There are places that previously did not even exist. You know, I'm talking about up in the mountains of New York, and I'm talking about the backyards of California. You go through California, you go through the vast land area. And you see all these Soledad and Folsom, these different various concentration camps. Whole lives, whole existence have been built literally on the backs, blood, sweat, and tears of people. And not to even mention the side economies, the phone companies, the ones who get the contracts for the handcuffs, for the visiting room glass, the counselors. It's a whole economy, whole lifestyle. You can look at Angola, which is one of the largest concentration camps inside the United States. and in fact was named directly because a lot of those who they had kidnapped from Africa had came directly from Angola in Africa. And this is where Angola 3, two of the remaining members are still here captive at. And you can just see the whole situation where the guards literally don't even leave the grounds. I mean, they live there, they work there, the whole economy, you know what I'm saying, they stay there, and it's a whole existence. You cannot talk about American history. You can't talk about present day America. In fact, not just America. How the U.S. imperialism is tentacles. How it far reaches into Canada, the effects of it, Brazil, Ireland, you name it. In the whole, you know what I'm saying, every discussion you have about every corporation, every entity, how it benefits of slave labor. You had discussion sometime about how they're contracting prisoners out to do the network or phone call out, you know what I'm saying, to call people for, you know what I'm saying, getting contracts for different insurance companies and different businesses. This is not a side issue. This is one of the major issues. This is a gut to this parasite, you know what I'm saying? And it's something that has to be, that must be discussed and put in its correct context, you know what I'm saying? Not only just how the economy benefits, how it's birthed and how it thrives and how it exists, are literally of the backs, blood, sweat, and tears of black and other oppressed people.
Now, you know, when we're talking about these millions, in fact, of bodies, particularly racialized bodies that are imprisoned in the United States and Canada, that are targeted, that are the main targets of, or let's say the majority of the targets of police terrorism and brutality. We're talking about, in many cases, youth and other peoples who have been pushed into, have been forced into illegal means of survival. People who, you know, would be deemed, whether that be the category of lumpen, whether that be the category of criminals or gang members, supposedly. And it's interesting because when you look at whether that's, you know, revisionist and completely incorrect interpretations of the Black Panther Party, which cite, you know, their gang organizing and their organizing among, as you put it, unpoliticized street tribes as the reason for their downfall, whether you look at, and I know we've encountered this in our own organizing here in the city, when we're there speaking about police brutality, speaking about the cases of individuals within the city, racialized youth who've been murdered by the police, the first thing that's said to us by you know, many people that call themselves radicals or even sometimes even members of the community is that, you know, that guy was a gang member, that guy was a criminal, you know, he was, so, you know, we can't touch the campaign or we can't be involved. There seems to be a resistance and almost a denial of the organizability of this group of people. You know, can you respond to some of those statements that have arisen that somehow cast what is called the lumpen proletariat as unable to organize, as somehow almost deeming them enemies of the people in a sense, and how that fits in with the success or the organizing that the PLCC, that the Black Panther Party, that many other revolutionary organizations have in fact successfully done among this section of the people?
Well, exposed, in particular, even dealing with this phenomenon that a lot of people like to refer to as black-on-black crime or horizontal violence. And we do take issue with terms such as black-on-black crime because our position is that white power, imperialism, controls this. And a lot of people say, well, here comes Chairman Fred. He's always blaming the government or the system for the ills in the community. And I do. We do. And it's not some sort of conspiracy theory. It's based on facts. Because we said non-independent people does not make independent decisions. In other words, everything ranging from the type of drugs that we strung out on in our communities, the type of activities that we engage in, it is not some sort of independent decision that we make. Similar to that, when you have generations growing up, so they want to be football players like O.J. Simpson or basketball players like Michael Jordan or rappers like Nelly. This isn't some sort of independent decision. It is relayed to the community directly or indirectly, overtly and covertly. You know what I'm saying? This is what you're allowed to do, and including that of pushing what we refer to as the plantation poison or the narcotics. You know what I'm saying? Our position remains steadfast. The U.S. government, this is the biggest drug supply in our communities, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of people say, and we don't take a liberal position saying that the government allows the drugs out of the community. We take a progressive position, and a principal position, exposing that our communities are literally flooded with not only narcotics, but our communities are flooded with informants and agent provocateurs. You've seen such cases as Frank Lucas, who was depicted on the American Gangster in the movie about it. This is one. This is one. U.S. He worked for the U.S. government. He did not later on become some sort of informant, and he was directly working for the U.S. government. Just as they flood these Negroes like Slave Z, I don't even call them JC, to put certain propaganda. They drop propaganda bombs in our community where they glorify, romanticize certain things. And so you have casualties of war. In our community, when we say that there's a war being waged in our community, we do understand that we have seen and witnessed a lot of casualties of war. But the people must check their emotions and not let their emotions check them, and be very clear. Like I said earlier, there's an economy and a livelihood based on this. Anyone that believes that the police department or the government wants to stop drugs or drive-bys or crime, you believe that Don King wants to stop boxing. Because there's an incentive based inside our communities, and even with the police, their procedures, they receive more of a commission if they lock you up for armed robbery as opposed to a robbery. Case after case, it has been exposed. I'm not just talking about the high level cases of the relationship that Noriega had with George Bush. I'm talking about down to the local level in the streets of Chicago, 7th District Police Station, working with informants, bringing informants inside the community, and literally forcing young youth to sell drugs and narcotics, you know what I'm saying? And it's not a decision that these young brothers and sisters are making. So in other words, we have to fight for the democratic space to be able to deal with our contradictions and provide some opportunities, you know what I'm saying, the people can make some real deal choices. Other than that, we are jiving ourselves. Everything from these quote-unquote choices people think they're making about their religious choices to the type of occupation that they think they can engage in to the type of music they think that they can sing. It's not by happenstance or coincidence that our airways, through these clear channel controlled Negroes like Steve Harvey and them, they flood the propaganda of these punks like Puffball Combs and Lil Slave. And these are propaganda bombs they drop in our community, and they tell us what we need to do. And there's no independent decision being made in our community. We've seen during the era of the Black Power Movement. We've seen in the 60s, the whole conscious level, you know what I'm saying, stood up, you know what I'm saying, and up the ante. You know what I'm saying? How we dealt with each other. You know, certain terms that you cannot refer to women as. You know, even by the FBI's own records, they say when the Black Panther Party was in existence, there was a record low to what they would call black-on-black crime. This is an organization that upped the ante. When certain things weren't cool, it wasn't cooler to steal from the people. It wasn't cool to disrespect sisters. And you've seen forces like Imam Jamil Alameen, being known as H.R. Brown, literally forced James Brown to change the song he had. James Brown wasn't even talking about making no song called I'm Black and I'm Proud. They put the pressure on him. He came back out to him, I'm Black and I'm Proud. And movements make these things happen. It was the POCC that drove down on Kanye West 8 hours before he said what he said about George Bush in reference to Hurricane America. Notice I didn't say Hurricane Katrina. But we talked to him 8 hours before he said that. Sent him down. And these movements make these things happen. Things that don't come out of a vacuum happen on its own volition. Movements make things happen. Streets make the music. Music don't make the streets.
Most definitely here in the city, just to you know, put that in the context for people that are listening. Right here in the city, Kevin Bourne, Patrick Lee, two Toronto police officers that were, one of them was in the precinct that was in charge of Gina Finch area, which is a large racialized community for your benefit, Chairman, in the city, and the other one in Regent Park. Both of these are highly racialized areas of the city. These two Toronto police officers were operating, have now been charged and have now been found to have been operating one of the largest grow-ups in Toronto's history. They were pumping, ecstasy, all sorts of drugs in these very same communities that they were patrolling as Toronto police officers. So this is definitely something that shouldn't come as a surprise. You know, when they raid, for example, a neighborhood in the city and find that, you know, all the drugs, all the cocaine was coming in on Air Canada. These things are you know, not definitely not something that should be a surprise to people.
I'm glad you made that point. We stress to make the connections. You know, so whether it be the ghettos of Chicago, the barrios, to the reservations, you know what I'm saying, with the native people are subjected on. And it's, and I just want to stress one thing in particular. You mentioned about the ecstasy, even the type of narcotics that they flood the communities with. This ecstasy is making a real big move, and not a big move. The government is, they're flooding through our community, and we must assess it for what it is. This is chemical biological warfare. They do studies on everything that comes to our community. A lot of people say it's conspiracy theory, believe the government created crack, but this is a chemical agent that even their own studies say that depending on the amount of melanin inside someone's skin affects on how the crack can affect them. And you know, this ecstasy, I'm talking, you can see the psychological effects that's happening now. The results outside our community, and this is literally chemically made. Now you had different discussions about other narcotics before, where we don't know where it comes from, if it's birth or it comes from some sort of natural origin. But this is literally chemically made. You know what I'm saying? And it's flooded in various communities at certain times. In other words, we seen crack flood our community at a particular time. When they don't say after, we seen heroin flood through the communities at the heels of a military defeat of the Black Panther Party. You know what I'm saying? Where people nodded out. You know what I'm saying? It was just people who were throwing their fists up and, you know what I'm saying, were strapped up and saying power to the people. Literally nodding their heads out. Then you seen us flooded with the crack. And so ecstasy is a strategic move by U.S. imperialism. You know what I'm saying? And it must be designed for what it is. Chemical biological warfare throughout the community.
Also, you mentioned earlier about this concept of intellectual masturbation. Often, when you organize youth who have been effectively locked out of the job market, out of the means of production, and who we know have a lot more to risk when they organize, what type of advice do you have for the countless members of youth from our city who are organizing alongside, who don't have the same sort of privilege to go fall back on an NGO job or a job in the student sector when they're done organizing, but who risk life and limb and their very means of survival to be a part of the struggle?
Good question. We got to, and I always... I don't want to sound redundant, but I must reiterate the whole concept of viewing this as a war, and that's what it is. When I say that, you put it in war terms and in political terms, which we say, for example, like similar to like you have the ruling class's army, the U.S. Army. They understand. Okay, well, we have to put this soldier here. Cannot be in this type of situation. You know what I'm saying? Because that's how we have to look at this. We got various forces where they get, they're on papers or parole. It's certain, we have to be scientific about this. In fact, Chairman Fred said revolution is a scientific art that must be perfected. Again, revolution is a scientific art that must be perfected. It's not just based on good emotions or good intentions. We're dealing with people's lives here. So we have roles for different forces, whether it be, some force may do the call-ins, and some people might, might engage in the hunger strikes. That's how we have to start assessing this. And I think we must acknowledge and recognize there are resources in the community, but the masses, the people are not benefiting off these resources. These various poverty pimps, you know what I'm saying, whether they come in the form of preachers or selected, notice I'm not saying elected, selected politicians, whatever the case, we must really destroy this class piece. In other words, make it uncomfortable for these parasites and these punks and these poverty pimps, to come up there and put this image that everything is okay in our communities. And even these rappers, a lot of these entertainers are modern day Pied Pipers. They send them in, give this image, everything is cool. This class piece must be destroyed. There are a number of ways it can be destroyed. Again, the terms, notice that even, we say slavesy, we don't call them JC. You start using political terms, create an atmosphere, a climate, where we do what the Alcoholics Anonymous says. The first step in addressing the problem is recognize we got a problem. We have to acknowledge, man, no, everything ain't cool. We don't care who sits up in that house on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., whether it be the gringo or the negro, whether it be Sam or Sambo. The masses are still going through brutal realities and brutal conditions. We must expose them. And we must call certain questions, and we must set up exposure contradictions. You'll be surprised at what type of concessions can come down there to the masses. When these concessions come down, we must be principled and take a position with Frantz Fanon of the Algerian Revolution said, to be able to accept the concessions but never compromise our principles. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of times they have these buffers. These buffers come in and tell you, don't say nothing. Just starve, peace, starve quietly. Don't address this here. We want to shake up this Klan's peace. And that includes those forces who on parole, you know what I'm saying, must organize and be very clear that we can't, don't be liberal and let somebody, let them bring up some sort of spokesperson for you once a month who you've never seen, or come up during election time or Black History Month, or, you know what I'm saying, to be your source, your spokesperson. If it don't meet the needs of the people, it should not be allowed in the community. That's the position that we got to take. And don't let nobody, even when you, with those forces who have been held captive, I'm speaking to those forces in particular, don't let nobody dupe you into, well, you know, you did something wrong, and God is getting back at you, this, you know what I'm saying, that's why you got to suffer this way. No, them real criminals, them banksters and them gangsters who, you know what I'm saying, who are responsible for the mass foreclosures in our communities, them real parasites who sit back in those ivory towers and write those policies, implement those practices, you know what I'm saying, they're responsible for your mamas and your stars, and for, you know what I'm saying, make the set the situation, you can have your head down, you walk, you can't feed your baby. No, those are the real criminals, those gangsters and banksters. So we, you know what I'm saying, we must be very clear, we must be armed with a politic to be able to distinguish revolutionary from reactionaryism. We must be armed with a politic to be able to distinguish stealing from liberating. We must be armed with a politic to distinguish the criminal from the victim. And we can acknowledge that we are victims, but we must be fighting back victims, as we've seen in Vietnam with Giap and Okahoe, where they politicized the people, even the prostitutes became clear. When they started engaging us, they recognized that the U.S. imperialism was the enemy, French imperialism was the enemy, and they're just saying that whatever contradictions, whatever I did wrong, we say the Black Panther Party said that differences amongst the people are reconcilable. However, differences between the people and the state are irreconcilable. There are certain lines that cannot be crossed. In other words, there are certain cases that don't care no probation. There's, when you cross the line of, you know, saying a snitch or cooperating or working with the enemy, with the state, with U.S. imperialism, we say no probation, no forgiving. But there are contradictions that people have engaged in the community that are reconcilable, and that's how we have to look at this. That's how we have to view this.
Definitely. Are there any last words for our listeners? This is going to be broadcast once again as part of CHOY special broadcast tomorrow on Prisons Justice Day.
Well, to those, to the colonized community throughout Canada, to those in my own land in Africa, to the native community, you know what I'm saying, what they refer to as BC, to the all freedom fighting forces, you know what I'm saying, throughout the world. Instead of the clenched fists, we say keep your head up, your eyes open, your fists clenched. Keep the cases of Oscar Grant in California on your minds and heart. Keep the cases of the day-to-day issues that the oppressed community got to deal with, you know what I'm saying, on your minds and heart. Don't let no star-spangled slaves, I don't care who it is, on the, whether they come in the form of entertainers, athletes, whatever. Don't let them come and, you know, trying to soothe your sleep with no snake oil. We are starving out here. You know, there are brutal conditions that our people are going through in those concentration camps. Those are brutal conditions that we see forces subjected to on those reservations. And we stand in solidarity with those, you know, saying, with the lovers of liberation. Again, the lovers of liberation. And we say if it's a crime to want to be free, then so be it. You know what I'm saying? So again, we say long live the spirit of the late great Field Marshal George Jackson. Long live the spirit of young man Charles Jonathan Jackson. And we say, what's our call? Free them all. We say in the words of Chairman Fred, dare to struggle, dare to win. You don't dare to struggle, then damn it, you don't deserve to win.
Most definitely, Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., it's been an honor to have you on. We'll definitely keep more closely in contact in terms of, you know, as an organization, and we definitely want to have you on the show again.
This has been. We thank you. We thank Basics Newsletter. Keep doing what you do. We say the Black Panther Party also said about information. Information is raw material for new ideas.
Thank you, and we'll continue to keep in contact.
Right on. Free them all, power to the people.